prisoner will now rise and face the court to be sentenced.
Tony, this is always a painful moment for me. I cannot tell you how reluctant I am to send you, a child 15 years old, away from his home and his parents and his community. But the law leaves me no alternative. I hereby sentence you 1 year at the State Correction Home for Boys.
Living 1949, brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror today to reflect the national problem caused by the increasing number of young folk who are coming face to face with the law of their elders. The problem posed by the riddle called juvenile delinquency in a drama document entitled
As the Twig is Bent.
Our narrator, Peter Roberts. Greetings, America. Year in and year out, there is not a day that goes by in which some child is not brought before the bar of justice for some serious crime. For the proof of this unwholesome pudding, all you have to do is consider these figures from the FBI.
Crime among youth continues at a high level. During the year just passed, approximately 116,000 boys and girls under 21 were arrested and...
Just press your fingers in the ink pad, please.
And fingerprinted. These constituted more than...
15%.
More than 15% of the total arrests throughout the nation. Moreover, approximately...
28%.
28% of all these following crimes against society...
Robbery, burglary, larceny, auto thefts, fraud...
...were committed by over 50,000 juveniles under 21 years of age.
And the FBI asks you to remember...
Startling as this may seem, the number of arrest records is doubtlessly incomplete in the lower age groups because of this practice.
Son, I hate to think of anyone young as yourself starting off life with a record. So we're not going to fingerprint you.
Result, untold additional numbers of juvenile criminals each year go uncounted.
Think of these figures, America, not as figures, but as young people, children. For children are people, individuals on the way to manhood and womanhood, part of the seed from which the future stock of this nation must be drawn. Part of those to whose hands we must someday turn over the problems of international peace, understanding, and justice. Then well might you ask,
why? What is the cause of all this delinquency?
Who is to blame?
We ask the same questions. Ask them of one who should know, the judge of a juvenile court. What you'll hear from here on out is the answer he gave us.
I've asked myself the same questions a million times.
Why? What is the cause of all this delinquency?
Who is to blame?
It is because I, too, wanted the answers to these questions, questions that had been disturbing my sleep, my peace of mind, that I came to know three delinquents better, perhaps, than I've known any other children.
Who were they, Your Honor?
The first of these, Mr. Roberts, was Tony. Tony was only 15 years old.
So what? What is the matter now? You sent me up, didn't you? Ain't you satisfied?
Well, Tony, I thought...
Well, don't think. It's bad for the head. Coming around bothering people all the time when you're thinking. I didn't do nothing no different than nobody else, see? Just had me a bad break, that's all. And I ain't kicking. I've been having bad breaks ever since I was a kid. I guess my first bad break was to be born at all.
Children is a handsome baby the Lord has blessed you with, ma'am. I don't know when I've seen a lovelier, healthier child.
Ah, thank you so much, Mrs. Murphy. This is my first boy. I'm happy.
Well, who knows? He may get to be president. Al Smith almost got to be president, you know. Grew up in just such a neighborhood as this he did.
Oh, I only want him to be a good boy, Mrs. Murphy. Just a good boy, that's all.
Ever been around Third Avenue where I hung out, Judge? That's a great place. Nobody hi-hat down there. Everybody like everybody else. We played baseball on the streets. And when the sun got too hot, we'd turn on a fire hydrant and splash around in the water in our underwear.
Hey, what do you kids think you're doing?
Until a cop came, that is. We gave the cops a pain. But cops are all stinkers anyway, Judge. My mother worked downtown. She nursed the floors in the hotel down there. So most of the time I was by myself, which was okay by me. My first job? Well, let me see. Oh, yeah, setting up pins in a bowling alley. That was my first job after school. Used to keep me up late, but I didn't care. I liked it. I liked to listen to the big guys talk.
We made $50 apiece on that deal, Joe and myself.
Yeah?
Cops never got wise to it.
What about the time you rolled a sailor you picked up near the Navy Yard, Al?
That's a story.
Well, go ahead, tell us.
Yeah. There's Gob, see? He's drunk as a loon, loaded to the gills with back pay.
Uh-huh.
Staggers over to me and Joe and says, hey, you fellas know where I can have a good time?
And then what?
Do we know? I'll say we did. Took him down to Jake's. You know where that is, Stan?
Yeah, yeah.
Started pouring him into him, the poor sap that hardly talked.
I used to like to listen to him, Judge. They're great guys. Didn't seem they ever had the work to get anywheres. They were just hep, that's all. Just like Al told me. He took a liking to me, Al did.
Look, kid, use your bean, you never have to use your back.
Yeah?
Let the other schmoes do the hard work. Just don't forget that what you got between your ears can make you all the dough you need if you keep one step ahead of the other guy.
I get you.
Now, here's two bits. Go on down, get me a cigar. Keep the change.
Oh, thanks.
If you're hep, you tell me they're all out of expensive cigars, bring me a cheap one. See what I mean? Use your bean, you never have to use your brain.
The first real jam I ever got, I guess, is when we tried to steal those tires.
We? Who do you mean by we, Tony?
Listen, I ain't mentioning no names. The Aces, that's enough for you. That's what we were called. The Aces. That was our gang.
Tell me about it.
Well, it was during the war, Judge. Tires are hard to get. We knew a fencer could get rid of them for us. Well, one night we were in the pool room across from the Bijou and...
Hey.
Huh? What's the matter? Another bride?
Look it over there in the dark there, this side of the alley.
I don't see nothing.
Brother, you blind tires. White sidewall tires.
Hey, you got something there.
Yeah, we ain't got it yet. What do you say?
Looks good.
Where's Bill and Charlie?
In the back room, playing blackjack.
Okay, go get them and keep your trap shut.
It was a late show, you see, and there wasn't nobody around. Looked like a daisy of a setup. Geez, four white wall tires. They was worth a fortune. The first thing we did was to throw a rock at the street light in the corner of the alley so it'd be even darker. Then we waited. Nothing happened. No lights went on to see what was the matter. Nothing.
Tony?
Yeah?
You guys get everything ready?
Yeah.
Charlie, you stay here in the corner. Keep an eye peeled. We'll whistle if you see anything wrong.
Okay.
Now, come on, you guys. You jack her up. We'll start taking off the tires like we said.
Come on, hurry up.
Oh, not so much noise. Not so much noise.
Okay, okay. You know, it's no easy job taking off four tires in the dark. We had three of them off, mind you. Three of them. And almost a fourth when Charlie made with a whistle.
Oh, the laws. Come on, let's get out of here.
Come on, fellas, let's go on. Come on, come on. Maybe it was breaking the light that did it. Somebody must have called the cops.
Stop or we'll shoot.
Come on.
So they caught you, Tony.
Yeah, they caught us. They only shot over our heads to scare us. But they caught us. You sent Stan up for a stretch, remember? That was his fourth offense.
Oh, yes, I remember. And we put you on probation.
Yeah, that was bright, wasn't it? The gang chose me leader. And that's how I come to be here.
How did it all start, Tony?
I don't know. One gang just don't like another gang, that's all. You see, well, it was a hot, sticky night, and we were watching the dance in the park. Charlie came up to me and told me that this other gang was in our territory. Did they see you?
No, they didn't see me. I stayed out of the light.
Okay. We'll take care of them.
There they are, see?
They were under the streetlight on the other side. Since I was head of the gang, it was up to me. I said, all right, you guys stay here and cover me.
All right, we'll cover you.
I started across the street toward them. Suddenly, somebody from my side threw a bottle. And some guy on the other side started to holler.
Light him up!
toll was two bullets in Tony's arm. A 14-year-old dying from five police bullets, a revolver in his hand. Two boys with their jaws shattered. A police officer close to death at the hospital.
I didn't know they had guns, Judge. Honest, I didn't know they had guns.
What made Tony a delinquent? Now, perhaps the first thing occurs to you that occurred to me.
The neighborhood he grew up in.
Listen to the social worker's report on his neighborhood, Mr. Roberts.
Tony Abbasi lived in a slum, overrun with all the ailments which society inflicts upon its impoverished families. Poor sanitation, foul health conditions, overcrowding, pool rooms and taverns, cheap dance halls, gambling joints. Here, Tony Abbasi grew up, amidst conditions that are demoralizing, and fell, as most do, under the influence of the all-powerful gangs that run rampant.
Did Tony become a delinquent then because of his environment? If so, why didn't my friend, Dr. John McGuire, who was born and raised in the very same neighborhood, also become a delinquent? Instead of the most esteemed brain specialist in this city. If so, why isn't everyone who has lived in slums delinquents? If so, why do I have coming before me in court delinquent children from good neighborhoods and well-to-do families like Myrtle Brown? Try to pull yourself together, Myrtle. Take my handkerchief.
I'm all right.
That's good. Now, let's have a talk, you and I. How did this happen, all this trouble you got into?
I don't know, Judge. I don't know.
Well, it must have started somewhere. Think back. Weren't you happy at home?
No. No, I was never happy at home. Sometimes I could hardly stand even being there.
Weren't your parents good to you?
Oh, they were all right, I guess. No, they weren't either.
Why do you say that?
Ever since I was a kid, they clamped down on me like I was something around they wished they didn't have.
Myrtle, get off that sofa. How many times have I told you to stay out of the living room? I won't have this house messed up.
Mother, will you please send this kid to bed? I'm tired of answering her silly questions, and I've brought work home from the office that I've got to get done before I go down tomorrow.
That's the way it was almost from the moment I learned to toddle. I was the first baby. I always felt like I was something in the way. They only gave me the time they had to. As for bringing kids into the house...
Patsy and Nancy playing with you in here? Absolutely not. Mother has you to take care of as it is, and you're plenty enough. I won't have my house dirtied up by a lot of children running around.
That was when I was a little kid. And then Tom was born. Oh, Tom was different. He was the prize. I used to go walking with my father when he wheeled him in a carriage down the street.
Well, hello, Mr. Brown.
Oh, hi.
So this is the son and heir, huh?
Yes, sir. That's the little guy, all right.
Why, he's practically a Jack Dempsey already.
Thank
you. What
do
you call him?
Tom Jr.
Uh-huh, gonna carry on the old man's name, huh?
That's right.
And who's the little girl?
Oh, this is Myrtle.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, good luck to you, Mr. Brown.
Thanks.
Take care of that next heavyweight champ of the world now.
Thank you, I will. Come along, Myrtle. Oh, for goodness sake, stop sucking your thumb.
Couldn't you have imagined some of that, Myrtle?
I don't know. Maybe. But they treated us all the same when it came to entertaining friends at home, Judge. That's not imagination. When I started going to high school, oh, gosh, I wanted to invite the gang over to my house for a party now and then, just like the other girls did. But do you think they'd let me?
A gang of girls turning this house into bedlam just because it's your birthday?
Oh, but, Mother, I thought it would be nice.
It wouldn't be nice under any circumstances.
But the other girls' mothers let them
I
have...
I don't care what other girls' mothers do. Your father comes home tired from the office and needs to spend his evenings in peace. A bunch of girls and boys messing up the place in here isn't going to please him one bit. So you can just forget all about it.
Like I said, she was that way with all of us. As for my father, you'd think we couldn't even be trusted. One night, I came home from a double feature movie about 10:45, and he was waiting for me. Hello, Dad. I thought you'd be in bed.
Where you ought to be, in bed.
Yes, but...
Where have you been?
Well, I went to a movie with Jenny Fishman, like I told Sis to tell you. We didn't know it was going to be a double feature, Dad, so we got out later than we thought.
From now on, you don't go to any more movies except Saturday afternoons.
Dad, we came right home.
From now on, you're going to be home at 9 o'clock every night and in bed at 10.
But, Dad, we didn't do anything wrong.
Home at 9 and in bed at 10. I won't have any daughter of mine roaming the streets after dark when I don't know where she is, and I'm telling you here and now.
God, so I began to lie just so I could have time to myself. I'd say, Mother, I'm going to go over to study at Mabel Sweet's house this afternoon.
Well, who's Mabel Sweet?
You know, the new girl in my class.
Does she live far from here?
Just 2 blocks.
All right, but be home in time for dinner. You know how your father is.
I didn't tell him that Mabel's mother worked all day in town, so we had the whole house to ourselves. I'd do there what I couldn't do in my own house. We'd have boys in and we'd dance and raise Cain. Jeepers, a girl's got to have some fun, doesn't she, Judge?
Oh, yes. A girl has got to have some fun, Myrtle.
I'd invent school meetings and things like that, and I'd go down to the Purple Pup. That's the kind of juke joint near where I lived. And, well, I'd meet some kids, and we'd ride around in somebody's hot rod. Oh, Judge, I felt for the first time I was living. I could take a breath again. I wasn't any kid anymore that they should tell me what to do all the time.
When did you have your fight with your father, Myrtle?
How did you know?
Myrtle, I'm afraid I've listened to all too many of these stories. Go on.
Oh, it was when he found out I was lying to him. Some neighbor, I forget who, saw me at a roadhouse outside of town, and, well, you can guess the rest.
And then?
Well, that's when I decided to run away. You know, ever since I was a kid, people used to say...
Gosh, you're pretty, Myrtle. You ought to be a model.
Not just one, lots of people.
Say, if I was as pretty as you, Myrtle, I'd go and be a model.
Ever since I was a kid. And then when I was having all that trouble with my father, I saw an ad in a movie magazine that said...
Big demand for models, hundreds of girls, no different than you, are finding the answer to romance, excitement, fortune by becoming models. Advertisers are paying tremendous fees for trained models who meet easy demands. Your picture might soon grace a magazine cover, perhaps the screen itself, if you but grasp this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Simply fill out the coupon.
So you left home to become a model?
That's right.
What happened?
Oh, I wasn't good enough, I guess. When my money gave out, I had to take something. I got a job as an usher in a movie theater.
Yes?
I began to meet lots of fellas.
Hi, sister. New here, aren't you?
That's right. Just started last week.
Thought I didn't notice you before. I know all the girls who work here. Name's Jake. Jake Carney.
Oh.
What you doing after the show, baby?
Oh, nothing much.
How about me showing you some of the town?
Well...
What do you got to lose, baby? Do I look like the type that'd eat you?
Okay.
Meet you in the lobby.
Okay. That's the way it always began.
What you doing after the show, baby?
They took me on dates and everything, and... Well, in a little while, I lost my job.
And what?
Well, there was Bill. He said he was going to marry me. But he went away, and... Oh, Judge, I'm so ashamed. I'm so ashamed.
Myrtle Brown, juvenile delinquent. Why? We can't blame the neighborhood in this case, can we? Myrtle came from an excellent neighborhood. Impoverished family? Not at all. Myrtle's was a comparatively well-to-do family. Why, then, was Myrtle Brown a delinquent?
Why, Your Honor?
The social worker's report, Mr. Roberts, said...
Myrtle felt that she was a slighted child. Therefore, she sought to atone for this feeling of insecurity outside the home by seeking the attention of others. Her father and mother were unnecessarily strict. Therefore, she lied in order to avoid that strictness, to escape home and the discipline that was unpleasant to her. She did things away from home that she might not have done under her mother's watchful eye had she been permitted a more normal home life.
Was the home, then, the cause of Myrtle's delinquency, Judge? Were her parents to blame for... over-discipline, which has been called as great a sin as overindulgence?
Mr. Roberts, there is no doubt that the home has the greatest influence on the future of a child. But if Myrtle's parents were at fault, why weren't her brothers and sisters who came under the very same influence also delinquent? Now, there's a riddle to puzzle you.
Well, maybe the cause of delinquency is inherent in the child himself. Maybe the child is weak to begin with, easily led, not very interested in school.
Like Les Adams.
Who's he?
Well, let me tell you about him. Les lived in a little rural community, and just the other day I had him in to talk to him.
Did you want to see me, Jack?
Yes. Les, just to ask you a few questions, sit down.
Yes, sir.
Les, do you like your father and mother?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm awfully sorry I caused him so much trouble.
Then it wasn't because you didn't like the way things were at home that you did the things you did.
No, sir. Gosh, no. It was just I guess I didn't like school very much.
Why, Les?
Gee, I don't know. Just like being outside, that's all. I like working on the farm with my dad. I didn't like being all cooped up inside reading history and learning how much rain falls in Tibet or some crazy place.
Didn't you like your teachers?
I liked Miss Wilson. She was nice. One day she found me playing with an airplane model I made instead of studying my geography. She made me stay after class, but she didn't scold me.
Do you like airplanes, Leslie?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Airplanes are what I call something. There's one big one that flies right over the farm just the time when I go to fetch the cows. Boy.
That's a cross-country one, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. A DC-6. Maybe when I grow up, I can ride one of them. Maybe I can even pilot one.
Who knows, Leslie? It's possible.
You think so? You really think so?
I certainly do. But a good pilot has to know his geography, you know. Else he wouldn't know where he was going.
Oh, he could drive by instruments.
Well, I'll make a bargain with you, Leslie. You study your geography, and I'll arrange for you to join a class that's making airplane models that I know about in town.
You mean it? A place where they show you how to build them?
That's right. A club that's being formed to meet Saturday afternoons, if you can make it.
Oh, sure. Dad always drives in on Saturdays. Gee, Miss Wilson, I guess maybe I better start studying my geography if I'm going to be a pilot. But then Miss Wilson left, and we got that old, Miss Johnson.
Leslie Adams, you come up to the front of the room this minute and sit next to the girls. If you can't keep your hands folded while we recite the president, then you can just sit where I can keep an eye on you. Then you didn't study your arithmetic at all, is that it?
Yes, ma'am.
Apparently, Leslie Adams, the only thing you understand is punishment. Hold out your hand.
Is that when you started to play truant?
Yes, sir.
What made you do what you did to Miss Johnson's classroom?
Well, Butch, I mean, Roger Olson, he didn't like Miss Johnson either. And after she made us stay after school 3 nights in 1 week, he got an idea.
What do you say?
Well,
she's your enemy, isn't she? Just like she's mine.
Yeah,
well,
but...
Well, we can let our enemies get away with keeping us after school and everything? Or are we scared of them?
Just the same, it doesn't seem right.
Are you yellow?
No, I'm not yellow.
Okay, then, what are you kicking about? Let's go.
Well, Judge, that night we opened the school window to Miss Johnson's room. Butch went in first, and I dropped in after him.
Okay. Here's where we fix Miss Johnson. Watch. Here goes the globe of the world.
Maybe we ought to be careful, Butch.
Careful of what? See this ink bottle? Watch me throw a curve at that blackboard. Well, why don't you do something?
What?
Tip over a desk. Here, I'll help you. One, two... Three!
After we got punished for wrecking Miss Johnson's room, I could hardly bear to go to school. All the kids used to make fun of us and everything. I used to tell my mother I was going and not go. Butch and I would meet Mr. Jones's South Pasture and try to find things to do till it came to go home. Anything, as long as it was more exciting than arithmetic. We used to see the 9:45 go whistling by to meet the express at Kingston. Butch said he'd like to see a real train wreck. He'd never seen one. We didn't really mean nobody no harm that day. There's the 9:45 now.
Good. Hurry up. Let's get this last tie piled up on the tracks.
She's getting closer.
There. Now we'll see a wreck that's really a wreck. Come on.
Well, nobody no harm, Judge. We didn't mean to hurt any people.
Leslie Adams, just a kid who lived in the country, far removed from the slums of the big city. A child who liked his parents and his home, yet a child who was definitely a delinquent. Again, I asked myself, as I have 1,000 times.
Why?
Yes, why?
Well, wasn't Leslie truly a weak child, easily led?
Yes, but there are many bright, strong delinquents. Only a small proportion of our delinquents are of the mentally backward type.
Maybe school wasn't made very interesting to Leslie. You have to admit it failed to meet his needs.
Possibly, but the school's contribution was not so much one of commission as of omission. And remember, most of the other children were not affected.
What, then, is the real why?
Well, some people blame it on the gangster movies, detective stories, radio thrillers, comic books. But, Mr. Roberts, I have a nephew who absorbs all of them and goes quietly off to bed.
Perhaps we should blame society.
Yes, I've often thought I ought to be sentencing the mayor and the city council instead of the child.
For slums, filthy, poverty-stricken neighborhoods.
That's right. But any citizen is just as much to blame for all that as the officials they elect.
What about that phrase I've heard? There are no bad children, only bad parents?
Yes, I've often thought of holding the parents responsible. But many could answer like Leslie's mother, who wanted to be proud of her boy. Took him to church every Sunday and raised him just like his brothers, all of whom turned out all right. As to the schools, you can't make the schools responsible for a child's morals.
So where did you end up? What did you decide?
Finally, Mr. Roberts, I came to see that there is no one place where you can put the blame. No one cause of delinquency. So this is what I decided. I decided to stop worrying so much about who to condemn and see if I couldn't discover what to advise.
Mm-hmm. And did you?
Well, listen and see. To all parents, I have this to say. This is what I, a judge, after long thought on a subject that has concerned me much of my professional life, have come to conclude. Never have I seen a happy, well-adjusted child appear before me as a delinquent. Always remember, children are people, and people are individuals. No two, thank God, alike. If you want to fight delinquency everywhere, begin with the individual child, treating him and loving him as an individual and in your own home. There, bend every intelligent effort to see that your child, in relation to you, your neighborhood, the school, and the society in which he must live, is making the proper adjustment. And above all, is happy. It's not an easy answer, but it's the only one.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC public affairs staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Scripts are written by Lou Hazum. Music is conducted by Roy Shield, and your narrator today was Peter Roberts. The judge was played by John McGovern. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by joining us again next week when we will present a drama document about international student exchange entitled
The Precious Tie.
Ethel Merman rocks the rafters tonight on NBC.